Chapter 19, A Safe Home in a New Land. Harold, Harold, what is that long white line of coast?
That, Henry?
These are the white cliffs of the greatest country in the world.
That is France, put in Guillaume, quickly and defiantly.
Harold Vanek laughed good-humoredly, and leaning his arms on the bulwark, gazed without answering at the white cliff rising out of the bright silvery mist, which seemed to lie between them and the distant sea.
"Are you so proud of England, Harold?" asked Marie thoughtfully.
"I always once thought no one could ever love any country so well as one's own."
"Doubtless, mademoiselle," answered Harold, turning round at once. "But when one has two countries..."
"Are you English then yourself?" exclaimed Marie in astonishment. "I thought you belonged to Amsterdam."
"My father is a Hollander, but my mother was English, and she was the best woman that ever walked the earth."
"I didn't know that," said Henry with interest. "What was your mother's name?"
"Lady Marion Maynard, daughter of an English earl," said Harold, with a loving accent on his mother's name. "It is after her father that I was christened Harold."
"I never heard the name before, but I like it very much," said Marie simply.
"Thank you, mademoiselle," answered Harold with a bow. He and the young people had become great friends by this time, and he had exchanged Christian names with the boys, who admired him immensely. On the whole, they had had a very pleasant voyage, and Harold Vanek had taken care that they should not find it dull. Sometimes, he said, the barrels had been more full of fugitives than of fish, and once, in a time of stricter persecution a few months ago, he had taken as many as 50 passengers at one time. But on this occasion, Marie and her brothers were the only people on board besides the crew. Sometimes they talked of Amsterdam, and he did his best to describe the city and the customs of the Dutch, where they differed from the French. Henry brought out the letter which his father had left for them, and asked if he knew the name. Yes, he had met the lady once or twice, and believed she was charming, but did not know her so well as he now hoped to do. He believed she was French. Perhaps she was a relation of theirs, but this Marie did not know. She believed not.
"We ought to get into port tomorrow," said Harold, as he turned to look over the sea again.
"What time do you think it will be?" asked Henry.
"Well, if this wind holds on, we ought to be in the harbor early in the afternoon. You will be able to reach Madame van der Holst before the evening."
"Oh, dear," sighed Marie, "I am so tired of new places and new people."
"Thank you, mademoiselle," answered Harold in an odd, half-offended tone.
Marie turned quickly. "Harold, you could not think I meant you. We look on you quite as an old friend now, but that is just what I mean. One is no sooner at home and happy than one has to uproot oneself again, and begin once more at the beginning."
"Unfortunately, mademoiselle, old friends must first be new, and it is not for me to regret your necessity for making new friends. I do not feel as if Amsterdam were to be our permanent home," said Henry. "I agree with you so far, Harold, that if one cannot be French, it is best to be English. And if I may never own St. Croix again in France, I will plant a new one, not in Holland, but in England."
"And you too, mademoiselle, is your heart fixed on England?" asked Harold of Marie.
Marie's eyes met those of her brother with a smile. "Where Henry goes, I will go, and his country shall be mine," she answered. Harold turned away again rather abruptly, and walked off to another part of the vessel. The three children drew nearer to each other, and began to talk of their arrival at Amsterdam. It was not until past 4 o'clock
that they actually found themselves in the harbor at Amsterdam. The crowd and bustle seemed strange and alarming to the newcomers, unused as they had been to anything beyond their country home. Harold had been very much occupied in business for the last hour, but he now came up to them as they stood together on the deck, with their scanty bundle at their feet, uncertain how to proceed. "I can spare half an hour just now, Mademoiselle, to see you safe on your way to Madame van der Holst if you are ready to go." "Yes, we are quite ready," said Marie, rather mournfully, "except one thing, Henry." Henry blushed up to the eyes as he stepped aside to speak with Harold. "Monsieur de Vray said we were to settle with you," he began hesitatingly, but Harold cut him short in a moment. "Of course, Henry, it is all settled. You must not speak of anything further. Monsieur de Vray will be well satisfied, as I have been, to render any service to the children of Monsieur de St. Croix." "You are too good," faltered Henry, as he held out his hand. "We owe you both a debt which we can never repay." "I am repaid already," answered the young man warmly. "Come, mon ami, we must not keep Mademoiselle, your sister, waiting." They descended into the boat, which lay ready, and pushed off. A few minutes brought them to the landing place, and here they would have been assailed by a host of the creatures who frequent such places, but a few sharp words from Harold, whom they recognized, soon dispersed them, and followed only by one of the boatmen, who carried the small bundle of things which they had brought from St. Louis de Lenard, they made their way into one of the principal streets. "Madame van der Holst lives a little way out of the town," said Harold, as he stopped and sent the boatman for one of the unwieldy carriages then in use, an extravagance which Marie was going to protest against, but for a sign from Henry, who had not been able to tell her yet that he still had all the money they had when they left Bordeaux. "How long does it take to drive there?" asked Marie, as the conveyance came lumbering up. "Not more than half an hour," answered Harold. "You will be there soon after 6 o'clock, I hope. I wish I could have seen you safely to the door, but I fear I must not stay longer now." He was assisting Marie into the carriage as he spoke, and turned to the boys, who were waiting to bid him farewell before they followed. "It is not goodbye, you know," he said, with a warm grasp of Henry's hand, according to the English custom in which he had been brought up. "I shall be in Amsterdam for some time now, and you must let me come and see how you get on with Madame van der Holst." "Yes, do," answered all the three voices together, while Gloom added, "You promised to show us about Amsterdam, you know, and we will have no one else, will we, Marie?" "The strange land seems less strange already, now that we have one old friend in it," said Marie, smiling as she held out her hand to him. He bowed in answer, and then the carriage jolted forward, and they left Harold to go back to his work while they went on to their unknown home. They had often discussed the end of their journey before, but now that it seemed to have actually arrived, they were all nervous and restless. They had not the least idea what connection there had been between this lady and their father, nor how she was likely to receive them. Henry, indeed, had an indistinct idea that a cousin of his father, of whom he had been very fond, had married a Hollander, but could not remember ever having heard his name. It began to grow dusk, for it was now the middle of October, and the days were no longer very warm. Marie shivered a little, which made Henry begin to look round in order to see if there was nothing she could put on, and it was then that they discovered a warm fur cloak which Harold had been carrying over his arm, and which he had put unperceived by them into the carriage. "Just like Harold," commented Henry, as he proceeded to wrap it round his sister. "Yes," said Marie thoughtfully. "After all, Henry, it seems wrong to fear these strangers so much. One can see God is taking care of us, for how wonderfully kind everyone has been all the way." They had been passing through busy and tolerably well-lighted streets, but now all shops disappeared, and tall, large houses stood back from the road in gardens of their own. At one of these, the driver suddenly stopped, and getting down, announced that this was the house of Madame van der Holst. It looked very grand and imposing, and the children felt more strange and shy than ever as they got out and walked up the path to the house, and there was no way that they could see of driving up to the door. "If we had only been able to make ourselves look a little less like peasants," sighed Marie as they knocked at the door. It was promptly opened by an imposing manservant, and another equally grand was visible in the distance. Seeing three poorly dressed children, he instantly and with a most disgusted expression shut it again in their faces. "Encouraging," remarked Gloom, with his lazy smile of amusement. Marie gave a little nervous laugh, and Henry, a sudden flush of anger restoring all his confidence, gave another and far more peremptory knock at the door. The man put out his hand and said something angrily in Dutch, which they did not understand, but Henry, putting his foot so that the door should not shut again, drew out his letter and remarked coolly, "Carry that at once to your mistress and tell her that Mademoiselle de St. Croix of St. Croix with her two brothers waiting upon her." The man's face underwent a ludicrous change. Suspicion struggled with a natural instinct of respect to the well-sounding name as he opened the door, and allowing them to enter, looked doubtfully at his colleague, as if to entreat him to keep guard over them while he went upon his errand. There ensued a few moments of trying suspense, during which Henry conducted himself with an air of lordly indifference, which evidently made an impression upon the servant. Suddenly, one of the great doors leading into the hall was thrown open, and a tall, graceful woman, holding their father's letter open in her hand, came forward with a quick, anxious glance. Her eye fell upon Marie, and without giving the children time to greet her, she sprung forward and embraced her with a burst of tears. "Oh, my child," she cried, "thanks be to God, but only you, only three left." She embraced the two boys also as she spoke, much to the edification of the returning manservant, and led them straight into a beautiful drawing-room, full of warmth and light, where a gentleman, evidently Mynheer van der Holst, greeted them warmly. With her own hand she removed Marie's cloak and hat, scarcely giving her time to answer the many questions she asked about themselves and their journey. She drew Henry forward into the light. "His very image!" she exclaimed. "Oh, my children! You have never known me, and yet your father and I were like brother and sister together. He did right to send you to me, and yet how dreadful it all is. And I have been hoping all this time that he was safe in England. You must be Marie, my child. Yes, I am right. You are the likeness of your mother." "Chira, Celestine," here interposed her husband, who spoke French perfectly, but with a much stronger accent than Harold Van Eck. The poor children must be half-famished. Let us have supper at once, and they shall tell us all about it afterwards." His suggestion was immediately carried out, and while the supper was in preparation, Madame van der Holst took Marie up to her own room to divest her of some of her garments, and cried over her as she bathed her forehead with essences and waited upon her with her own hands. And when, for the first time since she left St. Croix, Marie felt her feet in white silk stockings and soft, well-fitting satin slippers, she began to think she had never known what luxury was till now. After supper, they had a long, quiet talk, that was not altogether sad while they related to their friends the terrible history of the last 6 weeks. Madame van der Holst wept freely, and her husband sat silently listening with a thoughtful countenance. Long afterwards, they could remember every detail of that first evening in their new home. And when at night Marie lay down on a bed, which was a combination of delicate linen, lace, satin, and eiderdown, and with the blessed thought that their long, strange journey was safely finished and their charge fulfilled, a sweet motherly face bent over her once more, and a tender voice, with a ring in it so like her father's, murmured, "My poor little one, Louis, child, you have done well, and please God, we will make your new life a happy one."